This is BoxScore, brought to you by GamesRadar. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Building a launch title for a brand new console is one of the toughest challenges a game maker can take on. And when you toss in the fact that it's the world's most popular sports game and the new hardware is unlike anything anyone's ever seen, the pressures are enormous. And that's the task that was set in front of Matt Pryor, the producer of FIFA for Sony's new Vita handheld. I had a chance to chat with Mr. Pryor a few weeks before his game was set to launch in North America alongside the Vita. We talked about the enormous amount of work it takes to make such a game, the challenges of building on new hardware, and the initial reactions of people to the Vita itself. And stay tuned after the interview for some final thoughts. All right, thank you. We are here with Matt Pryor, the producer for the FIFA for the Vita, coming out at launch when the Vita launches in February here in the United States. Matt has been kind enough to join us today, and I appreciate that. So, Matt, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Matt, you are the producer of FIFA Vita. Before we get into a lot into the game, if you don't mind, just giving me a little bit of your background and history with EA Sports, how you got into the video game business, how you kind of made your way to EA and into the FIFA series and ultimately to the game that you're working on right now.
Okay, so more aware listeners will probably pick up that I don't have a North American accent. I'm actually from England originally, and I actually ended up in Vancouver through marriage. I met my wife whilst traveling, and I married into Vancouver. And then, as fate would have it, I found out that FIFA was made here, which was kind of ironic. All my mates laugh at that because we used to play FIFA religiously, you know, 8 hours a day, tiles in a room kind of thing. So for me to, by chance, end up in the city that makes the game was, like I say, somewhat fate, I believe. So I ended up in Vancouver through marriage, and then I just found out EA were based here, and then I actually joined through QA. You'll probably find with most producers you speak to, they came through QA. It's kind of the normal route to being a producer, because to be a producer, you've got to have obviously a huge love and passion for video games, and to be in QA, you need likewise. So most people come through QA, and I was no different. You kind of fight your way through the trenches, start as an assistant producer, and then work your way up the ranks. So this was about 10 years ago. I joined QA. The first game I tested was Need for Speed, and then I also tested the football game, and then finally got onto FIFA, and then, like I say, worked my way through the ranks, became an assistant producer, and moved on up. So a kind of typical route, except for the immigration part, a kind of typical route producer takes.
Interesting. So the FIFA is a launch title for the Vita, which comes out on February 22nd, 2012, in the United States.
Yep.
I believe it's, well, actually, I don't know for sure. It's a launch game. I don't know if it's a $40 game or $50 game. Frankly, I'm not positive what they're retailing for at launch.
It's $39.99.
Okay, so
$40. So $40, yeah.
Very good. All right, so let's talk a little bit. First of all, a question, you mentioned being a producer. I kind of wanted to start off with something that may sound a little silly, but I think a lot of people really honestly don't know the answer to. What exactly does it mean to be the producer of a game? You know, kind of what does that specifically entail?
Well, if you tell anyone you're a producer of a game, they instantly jump to the conclusion that you just sit around and play games all day. I've had that many times when I mention what I do. So, yes, it is very kind of a misconception, and it's kind of a shrouded in mystery somewhat as to what we actually do. But it's kind of a very complex role. I mean, there's various levels of producer. As I just mentioned, the typical is through QA, and then you become an assistant producer, and kind of at that level you own a feature and the design of that feature. So maybe, you know, it's all the presentation of the game, or it's a game mode, that kind of thing. And then as you move up the ranks, you become an associate producer, and then you probably own multiple features on the design. But then when you get to kind of the producer level, which is what I'm at right now, I mean, it is very complex. To give it, it's kind of a one sentence summary. Basically, you own the game, so you're responsible entirely for the product, and that involves kind of early on setting the vision for the product. What do you want to do with this product? With a Vita, what do we want to get out of the product? What do we want to give to the consumer? Obviously, it's a football game or soccer game. I'll use football throughout this interview, but when I say football, obviously I mean soccer. What do you want? Obviously, it's a football game at heart, but then what do you want to achieve? What do you want to make it different on the Vita? There's kind of, with all the games, there's kind of an overarching goal and vision. And then it's selling that vision up. Obviously, you kind of have to sell your vision to the exec team, and then the company has to buy in and say, you know, get the green light. Yes, that's a good direction. We want that. That kind of falls in line with our company objectives, that kind of thing. And then from then on, it's kind of like you build the team itself. You help build the team. And obviously, that kind of feeds into the vision. So say if you wanted a game where you're focusing on online, this is going to be a big online game, then obviously the team makeup would be very different. You'd need online engineers, because engineers are a very different skill set. So it's, you know, anything in life, really. There's not just one specific online SE. There's online, there's rendering, there's various kind of facets. So you need to build the team around your vision. That's kind of early on again. And then obviously you also oversee the budget and the business side of things. You kind of set the budget and put in the P&L and all that kind of thing. So all the kind of things have to balance. This has to kind of achieve what we want from the company and kind of achieve those goals. And then moving on, obviously, then you oversee the production of the game. So, I mean, there's lots of facets to the role. Essentially, like I say, to give it its kind of quick synopsis, is you own the game from beginning to end.
You know, that's really interesting. I didn't realize that you needed to wear so many hats. You really need to be...
Oh, yeah.
You need to be a salesman, it sounds like, because it's almost like you're pitching your ideas to your boss.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to be somewhat of an accountant, because if you're doing profit and loss, then you've got to make sure the numbers make sense.
Yeah, we do have kind of guys specialized in the area, but you're certainly involved in it at a kind of overseeing level. You kind of have input to that. You don't kind of own it completely. We have the kind of accounting guys that do that, but certainly you're involved for sure.
Yeah, and you need to understand what makes sense and what doesn't. You need to understand margins, and you need to understand things like that.
Yeah, and then obviously you need to make the budget balance. Are you focusing, because obviously every game has limited resources, with those resources, are you putting the focus on the things that would get the kind of biggest bang for the buck kind of thing, what consumers want, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's all about kind of prioritizing as well.
And then lastly, you brought up something that is something I never even thought of. I should have, just because of kind of the nature of what I do. But then you got to get your team together, and you're not guaranteed to get all the guys that you want, because they might be working on something else, or you might only get somebody part-time, or, you know,
absolutely.
That's
because kind of in the industry, you do a game and then you move on to another game. There's this kind of continual shuffle, which is great. I mean, from a employee standpoint, it's good in the sense that the job never gets dull. I mean, there isn't really a day-to-day routine, or if there is, it kind of changes annually almost. Obviously some games kind of take longer to make, but us being on the sports side of things, we do kind of yearly iterative titles. So yeah, people shuffle about, the job's never the same from product to product, which is great. It gives people opportunity to work on something they would like to do. You don't get kind of stuck in a rut. It's a very dynamic role. So from our standpoint, it makes things a little more complicated, and this is that when a product ends, there's kind of this kind of big reshuffle of resources, and you kind of go for the guys you want or the guys that kind of fit to your vision. So yeah, it's very kind of a flexible and ever changing environment.
You know, I never really kind of understood the level of variability that there is, you know, year to year. I mean, as a guy who's been playing sports games for, you know, or let's just say a really long time, you know, and we're conditioned to the annualization of these sports games. We kind of just assume that it's the same guys making the same things over and over, and it's really sounds like it's not that way at all, which is kind of fascinating.
No, it's very, I mean, certain key guys, and if someone's happy in their role, or happy what they're doing, they're happy to stay on. It's kind of, obviously, EA is a great company to work for, and employee happiness, satisfaction is obviously paramount. And I mean, that kind of works both ways, right? If someone's happy in the role, by virtue, they're probably going to be better at that role. So it's kind of a two-way street. We want to keep people happy because the games get better if they are. But yes, it's very, very much people move on, people move off, people come back. So yeah, it's never the same team. I don't think in the history of FIFA, there's never the same team twice has made the same games. I mean, there's key people have moved on with the product, but there's always this kind of fluctuation and movement around the company.
So let's talk a little bit about your kind of a typical day in the life. I would imagine, and I could be wrong, I've already learned a couple things a couple of assumptions I had were shut down, but I would imagine there's really sort of three main phases of the development, sort of the beginning, the middle, and the beginning is when you're kind of doing a lot of what you spoke about, which is kind of pitching your vision, understanding the features, putting your team together, doing some of the design documentation, prototyping. Then I would imagine there's sort of the middle, which is really just the heavy lifting of the building, putting the code together, you know, trying to tie it all together. And then near the end, you're doing a lot more of your quality testing, stitching the final pieces together, doing your builds, getting your, the different sort of final touches to things like artwork and marketing plans. But I'm making a lot of assumptions. So maybe you could just kind of talk a little bit about what a typical day in the life for you as a producer is at those three or maybe more main stages of the development of a game.
Yeah, no, you pretty much hit the nail on the head in terms of kind of the stages. I mean, to give it a kind of proper terminology, as it were, we kind of have a pre-pro, which was the beginning, and then production itself, which would be kind of the middle, and then the end is what we would call finaling. So that's kind of the industry jargon for that. And pretty much if you call pre-pro the beginning, that, as I mentioned, that initially starts out with the producer kind of setting the vision. What do we want? And it's not just the producer, it's kind of the label wide. So we have obviously the soccer label here, a football label, and it would be kind of set at that level as well through various discussions. So that would be kind of the pre-pro, would be setting the vision and direction, selling that vision, like I say, selling that vision up, so we get kind of the green of what we want to do, what do we want to achieve with this, is it fiscally sound, that kind of thing. And then, like I mentioned, building the team and the budget, getting the right people in the right roles, setting, you know, who's going to be the lead of various areas, just kind of laying the groundwork for the whole process. And that's kind of what pre-pro. And then pre-pro also entails kind of proving out certain systems, you know, the software engineers kind of develop the kind of rudimentary systems. If there's a brand new feature, it's kind of plan those out, prototyping, that kind of thing, getting it kind of really kind of, like I say, laying the groundwork for when we ultimately roll into production, which would be, as you classified, kind of the middle. So that's going to start making the game, as it were. That's where all the, well, in pre-pro, all the design's written, right? You design all the kind of the detailed design of what we want to build, because obviously we don't want engineers going into building this thing with the idea being just in some producer's head, which is kind of as it was in the old school, but now it's much more kind of documentation. We kind of write what we call, it starts off a creative brief, which is kind of a brief synopsis of a feature, and then it rolls into a feature brief, which is a bit more detailed, and ultimately a design document, which is kind of the very meticulous design. The idea being that someone can read that and get a complete idea of what that feature is, which itself is very complex, because it's very easy to design a feature how it should do. So from A to B, this is what should happen. But then you also have to do the design of what shouldn't. So if someone goes off and does this, what happens? You kind of have to kind of cover all the bases, because inevitably, you know, no one just plays the game as it's meant. There's people go off and do something, and then something must happen. So it's kind of, you've got to kind of cover every single kind of facet of what would happen. And that's where the kind of the meticulous design comes in, which, like I say, is very complex in itself. So then we roll into production, which is kind of the making the game. So we start coding the game, we start getting builds, we start playing it, we obviously give feedback as to this is working, this isn't working. We tune in that period as well. Once the kind of game starts getting in a semblance of finality, then obviously no game kind of gets it right straight off the bat. There's obviously tuning and iteration and what we call CR, which is kind of a change request. So this isn't working, we need to do this kind of thing. So that's kind of where the game is molded and the core of the game is kind of fleshed out. And then we roll into the end, the finaling plan, which is kind of where we kind of start to ramp things down, which from a producer is probably the most brutal phase of it, because obviously you're working on timelines, you have to hit time and budget. And that's where you kind of have to start making the tough decisions of if this feature's not working and we're kind of running out of time, you kind of have to start cutting things. And this is where as a producer, you kind of, a little piece of you dies, because obviously you are, as a producer, you want to make the best possible product you can. Because all producers are gamers, you know, we've sat there and kind of criticized other products. But the reality of it is every team is working in time and budget. So you kind of have to make those sacrifices and decisions, have to ship some bugs. If it's like kind of a minor bug, you hope that doesn't really adversely affect the consumer experience. No game and the history of gaming has ever gone out without bugs. It's just bugs do get shipped. They have to ship if you want a game on time. What as a producer, your role is to make sure that those bugs that are shipped aren't detrimental to the overall quality. If something needs fixing, even if you're up against the time and budget, you make sure you have to get that fixed, because obviously you don't want it to impact the user experience, which at the end of the day is the paramount thing. We want to make the games the best possible games there are. So that's probably the most brutal from a producer standpoint, is just kind of finally in tune and shipping it. And also in that kind of finaling period is where you really kind of get a chance to kind of put the polish on it. Hopefully time allowing, it's where you kind of do the final little bits of tuning, you kind of push through those final, oh, we must do this because this makes it that much better. So that's kind of always kind of the most brutal phase of the whole process, because you're up against a time limit, and it's kind of a critical phase where the game really comes into its own. It's kind of that last little bit where it all gets polished, and ultimately that's the game that later gets shipped. So that's kind of the key thing. And then from a producer standpoint, moving on from that, as that's kind of ramping down and you in what we call first party, it then goes to kind of Sony, and they do all their testing and all the rest of it, or Sony in the case of Vita, obviously. And then also in that period, you do the PR. So as I'm doing now, you go out to, you know, game events, talk about the game, sell the game, explain the game, that kind of thing. So that's another facet to the producer role, the kind of outwardly facing voice of the game. So again, that's another kind of element to the role. So like I say, it's a very dynamic role. You've got many hats and many heads.
So there's a lot that goes on, and it sounds like even for a mature title, and when I say a mature title, I mean, you know, the third, fourth, fifth iteration of a annual sports game on a console. So, you know, Madden 12, Madden 11, Madden 10, mm-hmm. FIFA 12, FIFA 13. This is the game that you're producing right now is for the Vita, which is a brand new piece of hardware. So take us back to the very start of the development of FIFA for the Vita. When did you first find out that you'd be making this game for this platform? What was your reaction?
I first found out, I think it was back in August 2010, would have been around the time. My first reaction was great. I mean, it was exciting. It's always exciting to do new hardware, particularly in the Vita's case, new hardware that kind of brings new, unique functionality. Obviously, the Vita is all about kind of touchscreen, and the back touch is something I've never, you know, we've never seen before. So to have such kind of brand new, cutting-edge functionality is very exciting, because then it makes you start thinking from a design perspective of how can you utilize this. You start thinking about things you've never thought about previously. So that's always exciting. And then just the kind of the new hardware in itself is kind of exciting, particularly like the Vita is very, from a gaming standpoint, from a handheld game, and it really just takes handheld gaming into the next kind of next phase. I've personally never really been a huge handheld gamer before the Vita, because there was always this kind of distinct quality drop. You know, if you go from Sony PlayStation to handheld, there's always been a significant drop off in game quality. And as a kind of hardcore game, I always want to play the best games out there. But with Vita, that really kind of, it bridges that gap between the two, because now it really is kind of like the PlayStation in the palm of your hand. So when I learned about the Vita and what it was capable of and what it could bring the user, it was very exciting. And like I say, it also allows us to innovate in new ways. You know, you kind of think out of the box, to use an old cliche. But yeah, it was great to hear that not only was it coming, but I would be working on it and bringing FIFA to it.
So how do you and your team go about like actually learning to build games for the new hardware? Because, I mean, it's new tech. I mean, do you get training? Like, does Sony come and give you training? Do you get documentation? And then, like, what's the typical ramp-up time just to get acclimated to a new, you know, set of tech? And I use the word tech like I know what I'm talking about. You know, just, you know, I don't even really know what it really means, you know, when you get a brand-new console, a new set of architecture, a new way to render your user interface, a new way to store the data, all that stuff. I imagine some is leveraged, but some is new. How do you go about learning how to use all that stuff?
So that's more of the SE side of things. So from a game design standpoint, we obviously kind of, for us, it's ultimately what are the limitations of our hardware, how powerful it is, what can we do, what can't we do. That kind of drives the design, particularly in our instance, in that we're obviously bringing FIFA to the Vita. So we had the kind of PS3 to begin with, and our ultimate goal was obviously bring as much of that experience to the handheld as it was. So for us, the key was its capabilities. How powerful is it? What can we do? What can't we do? That kind of thing. From a development kind of the engineering aspect, they do get a little bit of training from Sony. We obviously get documentation of what is in it, like CPU, GPU, that kind of thing. So those guys kind of dig into that. What can we do? What can't we do? And the big difference really in terms of developing from a PS3 to Vita is it's kind of driven by the first party, i.e. Sony. They kind of give a bunch of direction and guidelines to can you do and what can't you do, what they call in the industry kind of TRCs. It's kind of like the guidelines of what you must and mustn't do. And it's that's the kind of difference between developing on the Vita and the PS3. So it's the challenge is adhering to those new rules and also adapting the game to work on the new hardware, because everyone thinks it's kind of very easy to port the game over, but in actuality it's pretty difficult, because obviously the Vita is not as powerful as the PS3. So to get FIFA, which is a game that pushes the PS3 to its limits, to get that working on the Vita isn't an easy task, and it took some of our finest minds to kind of get that working. And from a game design standpoint, obviously then you have to work out what do you want to do with the Vita, what makes the new Vita unique, and how can that be adapted to FIFA. So yeah, from a game design standpoint and all the rest of it, there's no real formal training. Like I say, the engineers do get a little bit of documentation and a little bit of training. The Sony guys come to the studio now and then to kind of walk people through, but there's not a robust training experience, as it were.
So, what are some of the differences when you're creating a game on a new platform? And obviously, when we say a game, in this case, obviously your experiences with FIFA for the Vita. So, what were some of the differences in creating your game on a new platform versus an existing one? And then, what are some of the similarities?
So the differences, like I mentioned previously, are kind of the rules you have to adhere to. There's a different set of guidelines, a different set of things you can and can't do. So that's probably the biggest difference. And then in terms of difference in the game itself, it's obviously, like I say, adapting the game to work on the Vita. The hardware is very different from the PSV, so inevitably there are differences in creating the game for that hardware. So there's a difference in that way. And then from a PS3 standpoint, obviously we have years of experience on that, so we know what to expect. So one of the differences from the Vita is we're first out of the blocks. We don't know what we're building on. And from an EA standpoint, we're the first game out there. So whereas PS3, you have kind of this kind of back catalogue of knowledge base of what to do and what you can't do and that kind of thing. And many people are experts in that area. We were kind of pioneers in this, so we were kind of blazing a trail. So inevitably doing that comes with its own challenges. You've got no one to go to and say, oh, how did you do this on this? You kind of have to work it out all by yourself. And obviously in a big company like EA, to be the kind of the trailblazers on that is a challenge and an honor, I guess, because we are the ones doing that. And now people are coming to us and asking us, you know, how to do this, that kind of thing. So the differences are many. Similarities, obviously, we've got the game. We know the game. We know what the game is. So one of the misconceptions is because it's a smaller device, the problems are smaller. But invariably, you're still building a game, and just because it's smaller, you have similar problems. So there is a lot of similarities around the actual core of the game. So, for example, you know, the way things work, or the licensing aspect. Licensing is a big part of FIFA, because obviously you're working with a lot of bodies. So like the various leagues, FIFA, the governing body itself. All of that kind of knowledge base, all of that is applicable to the PS3. It's more the kind of the hardware and functionality where things are different. But there are many similarities outside of that kind of technical aspect of things.
You know, it's interesting because the Vita is an extension to me, at least as a consumer. It seems almost like an extension of the PS3. But the Vita is also the successor to the PSP. And there were a number of successful, at least, you know, I don't know from a sales perspective, but certainly from a gameplay perspective, a number of really successful FIFA games on the PSP. So were there any sort of lessons you learned maybe not you specifically, but you as an organization, or you specifically individually, learn from the PSP builds or even for the PS3 builds that you applied to the first version of FIFA for the Vita at launch?
Yeah, there's a lot of learnings. It's obviously a different experience as a handheld. One of the things we learned from the PSP, surprisingly, is this, just because the device is mobile, everyone has this preconception that the only place people play it is on the move, on the bus, on the train, that kind of thing. But in actuality, most games played on a handheld are just played in the house. Most people just, it's just kind of an extension of their normal gaming experience. So, that's kind of an interesting learning from that inevitably, because it's mobile, everyone assumes people play it on the go, but that's not the case. So, there's things like that, and then obviously the experience itself, what works and what doesn't work on a handheld device, a lot of that can be brought over. A lot of the process is the same, and then from the PSP, the learnings from that is we had a similar problem with the PSP in the sense that, to use an example, it doesn't have as many buttons as the regular controller, so you kind of have to adapt gameplay to work on the hardware. And then the experience as well, what people want from a handheld versus a regular game. So there were a lot of learnings we brought over from the PSP that we could apply to the Vita.
So the Vita, everyone that I have spoken to that has seen it is raving about it from a technical hardware prowess perspective. It looks great, a lot of power. When you first got your hands on it, what was one of your first kind of aha moments when you started designing FIFA on the Vita based upon the machine when it got in your hands?
There were a few along the way. It's obviously a very gradual process. A lot of people think FIFA just kind of appears on the Vita, but obviously a very, very gradual process. You don't just copy and paste it over to the from the PSP to the Vita, if only you could. So, one of the many aha moments kind of along the way, probably the first one was seeing something running on the Vita, kind of having this device in your hand and actually something. Because obviously part of the early process is just getting all the systems from the PS3 running it, so compiling and linking and all this kind of engineering jargon. At that time, you're not seeing anything on the screen. So one of the first aha moments was when we actually saw it. Now, from a gamer standpoint, you'd be very unimpressed with what you first saw. It's kind of like stick figures running around this kind of environment, this stick environment at like 3 frames a second. So it wouldn't impress anyone from a gaming standpoint, but just that kind of, okay, this is going to happen kind of aha moment. We've kind of finally got things in. This is actually going to work kind of deal. And then probably second is getting the gameplay actually to a playable state. So obviously from the stick figures, it goes through a very kind of gradual iterative process. Then you get the players rendering, then you get the pitch rendering, then you get the stadium rendering. It all kind of comes together gradually. And on top of all that, you've also got frame rate. So frame rate, as you see it when you play it, this kind of super smooth, beautiful 30 frames a second, that is a very gradual process as well. It kind of literally goes like frame-to-frame increments from build to build almost. So once we got the game actually playable, in a playable state, that was an aha moment, because one of the things with Vita is we wanted to do a lot of controls around the touchscreen. We didn't just want to make a kind of gimmicky touchscreen features. We wanted to create features that affected the game at a core level. And as a result, they obviously needed a lot of prototype, and you had to have a game working in your hands to get a feel of what would work and what wouldn't work. So once we got the game to a playable state, that was kind of the next aha moment, because then we could kind of start prototyping the new features. And then probably the final one, probably the biggest one for me, was when we actually implemented the touchscreen, tuned it, and then we could actually play it. So I remember quite vividly the first time I scored what I called a complete touchscreen goal. So we have touchscreen passing and shooting in the game, which allows you to pass and shoot by virtue of the touchscreen, both the front and back. So I recall quite vividly scoring my first ever touchscreen goal. So from the goalkeeper, I passed it out all the way down the field using touchscreen, and then using the rear touch, kind of picked my spot in the top right-hand corner and scored a goal completely crafted with touchscreen, which is kind of all our new features. And just the level of reward and satisfaction that gave me, because you're no longer at the mercy of the AI. The AI is not pulling the strings, as it were. I can pass to any pixel point on the pitch, and likewise shoot at any point in the goal, which on previously FIFA has never really allowed that level of accuracy. So to do that and then score the goal, it really kind of achieved everything we wanted to achieve with these features, in that it gave a much more sense of satisfaction and reward in scoring, which is exactly what we want these features to do. So that was probably the biggest aha moment of the process.
You know, it's funny, you're talking about this, and I'm thinking, I love FIFA. I've been playing FIFA forever, but I'm terrible at it. And, you know, I'm terrible at it for a bunch of reasons, but the probably the biggest reason I'm terrible at it is because to score, and it's football, it's soccer, it should be difficult to score. I get that. But that's why I'm terrible at it, because, you know, you have to really, when you're running down, you know, and you got a shot on goal, you have to just tap the button the very right amount, and you got to aim with the stick just the right way, and you're actually not facing the direction that you're shooting, right? You're running left to right, but you're aiming, you know, from a different perspective. And it sounds like you said it, the biggest change here is that you can actually just point to where you want the ball to go. And that sounds revolutionary, not only for the Vita, but I'm just like sitting here dreaming things up, and I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but it sounds like what you're laying the ground, the foundation for here could be maybe the new control mechanism for some of the consoles coming, based upon what you guys have got cooking here with the Vita.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things we did when we started the process of designing for the Vita is we wanted to, obviously we saw the touchscreen and the ability that gives you. That gives you kind of the ability to kind of point and press exactly where you want to go. So we thought, how would that be utilized in FIFA? And how could we address some of the more frustrating things about FIFA? So obviously we play a lot in the office, and when you're playing, it's rarely a game goes past when someone doesn't scream at the screen, "Not that guy, not that guy," when they make a pass. And the reason for that is obviously you're at the kind of the mercy of the AI. You might be looking at the player on screen and trying to make a pass, but obviously the AI has limitations in the sense that if there's a player in the middle between that guy, it might assume that you wanted that pass. So just kind of by virtue of the control mechanism of FIFA, there's certain times when you may pass to the player you didn't want to. So one of the things we thought, well, touchscreen, we know we can kind of cut that unknown out, where if you press on the screen, there's no kind of ambiguity of where you want it to go. That's exactly where you want it to go. That was one of the frustrations we could remove. And then what that also allows is people with a football brain to inevitably have a better advantage. So if you could see a 50-yard killer ball because you know football and you can see where the players are positioned, in FIFA it might be hard to deliver that if you're not a really good gamer, because you're kind of at the limit of the controls. Maybe you've got the analog stick feathered slightly at the wrong angle, or you get the power wrong. You kind of had to be a good gamer as well as good football knowledge to achieve that. And what you're able to do now is use that footballing knowledge and make passes based on that just by touching the screen. So it really opens up the game to a new level of intelligence, as it were. And likewise, with the shooting, again, there's often the frustration of when you're clean through on goal, you mentioned it just yourself, when you press the shoot button, there's a sense of hit and hope. Do you really know exactly where it's going to go? All but the kind of super gamers can have any kind of level of accuracy. So what this does, and what one of the things we wanted to do with the shooting, was to take that frustration out. And like I mentioned when I was talking about the high score, really put that level of control into the hands of the users. And scoring is obviously the highest of highs in football, and the more control you can give to the user, the more rewarding it is. So if I tap the top corner and I see it arc into the top corner, the level of reward that I actually did that much higher. So we wanted to kind of take some of the main frustration deeper and kind of use the uniqueness of the Vita to combat those. And we have. I mean, the feedback we're getting is phenomenal. It's kind of checking all the boxes we wanted to do. What we find is, and one of the other key things is, we didn't want to force these features down the user's throat. If you want to play the Vita as you would the PlayStation 3, you can do. All those existing controls are in. What we wanted to do is gamers an alternative, and what we're finding is people will play it as the PS3, and then gradually as they learn the touchscreen, because there is a little bit of a learning curve. Actually, touchscreen, particularly back, is quite revolutionary and kind of new. So no one's going to kind of do it immediately. But what we find is people start using the touchscreen in the back, and then once they kind of get familiarize themselves with it, they never go back to the existing controls, because why would you? You've got a level of control that you just don't have on the PS3. So yeah, it was really a good experience to kind of implement those and see the feedback we've been getting.
All right, well, two things just happened while you were talking. Number one, you gave me the name of my next fantasy team called Hit and Hope. So just, you know,
there you go.
I'm taking that one. But the other thing is you made me realize that this game, which I will be getting on day one, I've already got it pre-ordered and everything, is going to ruin me for regular controls when I go back to playing on the PS3 or the 360, because... it's funny you mention it. Like, you know, I'm the kind of an early adapter with a lot of tech, but I kind of tend to take a while to sort of really adapt to the new way to use some of the new tech. Like, I'm the kind of guy who's had, like, you know, the iPhone 4 for a while, but just in the last couple of weeks started using Siri, even though she's been around for like 6 months.
Right.
Some of the voice messaging. It'll be interesting to see how people, like you say, I think you made a wise decision to have both control mechanisms in place. It'll be interesting to see how quickly or not quickly some people adapt to the touch controls. And I would imagine that having a back touch and a front touch opened a lot more opportunities than just having a front touch screen.
Yeah, well, the way the back touch worked, because we sat down and looked at the device, and it just kind of clicked straight away almost. If you can imagine the dimensions of the goal, is very similar to kind of 16:9 screen. The way the back touch works, it's kind of very intuitive, is basically anywhere you touch on the back where you're aiming. So if you press top right-hand corner, you're actually aiming to the top right-hand corner of the goal. So actual physical dimensions of the Vita lent itself very well to football, in the sense that the screen itself looks like a goal. So probably the hardest thing people are finding, because I've been to a lot of PR events and obviously showcase this, probably the hardest learning of the whole thing is just how to hold the Vita without triggering the back touch. Because, you know, people's hand sizes and the way people hold things is very different. So one of the things we found is you give the Vita to some, and they generally tend to hold it whilst touching the back screen. Now, unfortunately, the way the Vita works is if you're already touching the back screen, another input won't register. So that's probably the biggest learning curve we've found. And what we've actually done in the game is if you're holding the Vita and touching that screen, an icon will trigger at the top warning that you're touching it, and touchscreen shooting won't work. So in terms of design, that was probably the biggest change. And it's so much so that you can't design for everyone, and, you know, everyone's hand size is different. As I say, we actually put a toggle in the control screen that you can actually touchscreen rear shooting off should you desire, if you're one of those very few people that just physically can't find, they can actually hold the device.
So interesting. So you do really, it's not only an adaption to using touchscreen to aim and pass and shoot, it's an adaption to how you would even hold the device and then choosing whether to go with one direction or the other. That's interesting.
Yeah. You'd be amazed how many thousands of ways people could hold this device. It's one of those things you never really think out to design it, and you kind of do what we call game obsession. So we get like people in and give them build and all the rest of it, and we just look watching people just pick it up and hold it, and almost no one holds it the same way. So we're just having to kind of think, okay, we've got to adapt to this. There is no best practice in how to hold it, even though the device has got grooves on the back, so clearly you're kind of meant to hold it with your fingers bent. There is a best practice on how to hold it. Very few people actually do that off the bat. So we actually kind of sat and looked at people and how they held it and thought, okay, we've got to be kind of clever and kind of cater to everyone. And ultimately, the catering to everyone is the ability to turn it off if you're just one of these. I think in all our tests, we had one person who said they just couldn't. Felt they just couldn't really hold it without touching the back screen.
Okay, so we've talked quite a bit about some of the about the cool Vita specific features, but walk me through sort of each of the key modes, just game modes that FIFA offers. I'm assuming there's a season or franchise. Be a pro.
Yep.
You know, just walk me through what I'm going to get when I get FIFA on day one.
Yeah, so harking back to one of the first things we do as a producer is set the vision for the title. One of the first things we did is we wanted to make sure this is a full and complete experience. We've seen time and time again launch titles on new hardware, they can come out and they're very lightweight. A lot of them tend to be just tight kind of tech demos almost wrapped around new functionality. The actual core and guts of the game is only a few hours gameplay. So we've seen that happen countless times, and that was one of our overarching visions, is this must be a full experience. So Vita represents the biggest and most complex game we've ever done for a handheld. So it has all the offline modes that you come to expect. So it has kind of, it's got the basic kickoff, right? So you can be a pro or be a goalkeeper in that, and also obviously control the whole team should you want. It's got the tournaments, as you mentioned, so more authentic tournaments than any other game out there. So that's anything from the Premier League to the MLS to the FA Cup to the Bundesliga, all these official authentic tournaments. So, I mean, literally, there's about a month's play just on those if you're going to go in and complete every single one. Various leagues from around the world. Oh, it's got all the leagues and teams that the PS3 has, so the more than any other game. It's got the over 25 leagues, 500 teams, thousands of authentic players. And all the assets are brought over from the PS3. One of the things in terms of the visuals on the Vita is it's identical to the PS3. So all the assets from PS3 are brought over. We hadn't had to kind of dumb them down in any way. So you get all that. Then the career mode is obviously the big one, or franchise, as you might call it. So that's kind of like the 15-season mode, where you can either be a player, you can just be the coach, or you can be a player coach. So depending on your level of involvement, how much you want to organize, do you want to do the transfer market, do you want to do the budget, do you want to do the sponsors, all that kind of thing. If you just want to be a player, you can just be a player. If you want to just be a coach, you just want to kind of sit back and control the team, do all the tactics, that kind of stuff. That's the way to go, or you can do both. So that's the real kind of hardcore kind of long mode. Like 15 seasons is a long time. And throughout that season, obviously, you can get promoted, relegated, fired, hired, that kind of thing. So that's a very kind of complex and kind of long mode. Then we've also got create, so you can create your tournaments. And then online, we also wanted to have an online experience. So what we don't have is some of the kind of more complex PS3 features that obviously took a long time to kind of come onto PS3. So things like OTP, so the clubs feature, and also Ultimate Team. Ultimate Team is an art this time around. What we do have is still the most popular mode on FIFA, and that's kind of the head-to-head online play. So you can play any other user anywhere in the world. You can log on and play anyone. We also got friends leagues, friends invites, that kind of thing. So if you just want to play a friend, you can invite him and have that kind of experience. And throughout all this, we've also the virtual pro, so you can create yourself. You can, and then all the accomplishments are tied to that. So there's kind of the big long laundry list of things to do with your virtual pro. So we have all that, and then obviously you can take him into career mode and put him on a team and all that kind of thing. So it really is a full and complete experience that's kind of the same as the console version. The only, like I say, the only things we don't really have is those kind of complex online modes. And the reason in mind that, particularly for like clubs and OTP, is we wanted to make sure from an online experience, the key thing is you go online and you're able to get a game. It's a good online experience. You don't go on and go and wait around for hours or minutes for an opponent to appear. So one of the things with clubs is obviously as new hardware, it's initially a smaller install base. And if you then have clubs, you kind of fracture that online community. So, you know, people go off and try and play clubs and look for an opponent, whereas people go off to head to head. So we wanted to make sure we had a good online experience for anyone that chooses to go online. So we didn't want to kind of split that online community. So we went with the head to head, which remains to this day the most popular mode in FIFA. So
you wouldn't be a video game producer if you weren't ready to hear people whine and moan and complain, right? And that's what we do.
Yeah, it comes with the territory.
So I mean, all kidding aside, though, I mean that's a very impressive list of features to have on a day one. But I've noticed that this game is called FIFA. It's not called FIFA 12. So. Do I, and the fact that you probably haven't brought it up yet probably means that I can expect there's no tie-in directly to the PS3 FIFA 12, so I won't be able to maybe cloud save and transfer my PS3 club or my Be A Pro back and forth between the Vita and the PS3 at launch.
Right. So that's something, that's one for the future for sure. So going back to kind of one of your earlier questions about what's it like building on new hardware, one of the challenges is that you've got nothing, right? You've got nothing to build up. I mean, we've got the PS3 game, but it's adapting hugely to work on the Vita. So there's no kind of ground level platform on which to build. We have to create that ground level platform. And in doing so, so for FIFA 12 is in was in at exactly the same time we were. So to bring that across, it's kind of trying to bring over a moving target. They're building it all the time, and we would be trying to build it, bring it over. They make changes, bring the changes over. It's kind of a technical impossibility to do that. So the reason we called it FIFA football, or FIFA soccer for the North American audience, is that we didn't want to set the expectation by calling it FIFA 12 that it's kind of exactly like for like the PS3 versions. There are certain features we weren't able to bring across. So at its core, we bring the entire AI engine over, or the core of the AI engine over, which is obviously the key thing. The couple of features we weren't able to bring over because they were in development for FIFA 12 is the impact engine and the tactical defending. So they were kind of big features on FIFA 12, and because we weren't, from a technical standpoint, able to bring those across, we didn't kind of call ourselves FIFA 12, because then the expectation that would be exactly the same. So that was the reasoning for the name change. Now, moving forward, hopefully if Vita's a big success, we go forward with it, then ultimately, we'd hope to get parity moving forward. Again, there's still technical challenges around that, but certainly now we have that groundwork. Now there is a base from which to build. It's a much easier process than we had to go through. So ideally, we will be able to get much more kind of parity with the console version. So maybe the Vita is called Vita 13 or FIFA 13. So that's kind of the reasoning behind that. And then in terms of the link, again, that kind of harks back to the reasoning there. Because we were laying the groundwork, we were setting the first iteration up, it's very difficult to look between the two because, again, like I say, we're building from the ground up. PS3 is obviously in production. But now we've set that groundwork, that is something we'd be looking at for future. Because, yeah, it's a kind of a no-brainer. You have the device that's portable. I could continue my career mode on the bus, on the train or whatever, come back, upload it to the cloud and then reload it from my PS3, and I've advanced that much further. It's something that I think most people would want, and it's certainly something we'd be looking towards in the future. And likewise, another kind of good use of that would be, I play my Ultimate Team on the PS3, I get on the bus and I go and buy packs or whatever, and my team, while I'm on the move, play a few games. It's kind of this experience wherever you want to go. So it's certainly something we are aware of, and it's something we would want to do. And the reason we couldn't do it this year is from a technical standpoint.
Sure. I mean, and it's something I've written about. It's something that you know, Sony's obviously promoting with the Vita. And I mean, you know, I look back, mm-hmm. I play, you're a gamer, you know, I'm a gamer, we play sports games, you know, Road to the Show, my guy in my NCAA football, you know, more often than not, I inevitably sort of lose steam on those because I'm tied to, you know, my console and my television. You know, right. As a guy, you know, I do a lot of traveling for work and you know, there's a lot of games that come out, and the ability to kind of have your experience be an experience that's tied to you as a person, not to you as a device. You know, like you said, it's a no-brainer. So it's good to hear that you guys have got plans for that. Obviously, based upon the success of the Vita moving forward. So that brings to mind another question. Then, so then, why a decision to be a launch title? Does that put added pressure on you? Clearly it does. What kind of added pressure does that put on you? And did that limit some of the things you want to do? Clearly it did. So why the launch title decision?
So from a launch title perspective, it's just because FIFA is one of the biggest games in the world. I mean, I think over its entire period, I think it is the biggest. It sold more titles, units than any other game, harking back from its origin. So it is one of the biggest games in the world, and clearly we wanted to bring that experience to the PSV2 at launch. FIFA's also available on one of the widest array of devices out there. You know, it's available on pretty much everything. So we didn't want to kind of miss the boat with the Vita. And then obviously from Sony's standpoint, being kind of a AAA flagship title, they were obviously keen for us to have it on the hardware because obviously games sell hardware. So it was in both our interests to be a launch title. But I mean, obviously EA's kind of cutting edge company. We want to be kind of at the forefront of everything. So at the end of the day, we wanted to be kind of on this from the get go and lay the foundations to what hopefully will be a very successful franchise on this hardware moving forward. In terms of does it add added pressure? Yes, clearly it does. Obviously, you've got a launch date that you have to work towards, and Sony aren't going to move. Even FIFA's a massive title, Sony aren't going to move their launch title just for one game. So yes, it does add added pressure. You don't have the luxury of being able to slip. So what that means is then you have a finite window in which you have to build the game, and then obviously, harking back to the whole kind of prioritizing and all the rest of it, you need to get, you kind of look at the estimates that the SEs have put against each feature, and then you have to kind of pick and choose what are the most important features, what makes the game that much better, and inevitably something has to drop off, unfortunately. And again, that's kind of one of the worst things about being a producer is you kind of come up with these ideas and then have to throw some of them away, which is never nice.
And it sounds like you probably don't have a whole lot of time for things like eating, sleeping, going on a date with your wife, things like that, especially
Not a great deal, no.
All right, so one last question. This is a question I'm sure a lot of people want to know. You're the producer of the game. Who's your favorite club? What's your, what jersey do you put on?
Oh, well, I'm life and death, bleed in my blood, Manchester City fan. So have been since I'm from Manchester or from around Manchester, and ex-season ticket holder back in the day. We used to be terrible. I mean, Manchester City have had a crazy resurgence right now due to kind of an owner coming in and pumping a load of money. So it's great to see from that side of things. It's kind of weird to look at the team now and look back at when I used to go and support them. So we dropped down. One of the things you don't have in North America, which I think kind of is good and bad from a fan's perspective in any case, is kind of the whole promotion and relegation. So in football, you can obviously drop down a whole league. And in actual fact, Manchester City have dropped down three leagues from where they are now. They dropped into the one below them and then the one below that. So at one point, we were in the Champions League this year, but at one point we were playing like almost village teams, as it were, back in England. And I was back there at that time, so I used to go to away matches against teams like Macclesfield, which is a kind of a funny little team. So I've been a Manchester City fan for all my life, actually. So it's a crazy roller coaster ride being a Manchester City fan. Now it's kind of the best time to be a Manchester City fan, and inevitably we'll probably get a few hangers-on who kind of jump onto the bandwagon. But I'm one of the kind of true long-suffering blues that you often hear of. So it's great to see that. And obviously, being a producer on a football video game is kind of a dream come true. Being kind of immersed in football, which is one of my passions, and one of my other passions is the computer game. So I kind of I'm in kind of a good spot to be in terms of career.
Well, it certainly shows through in talking to you. Matt Pryor, the FIFA Vita producer from EA Sports. FIFA for the Vita is a launch title coming out February 22nd, 2012 at $40. I'll be picking it up day one, I know that. Mr. Pryor, thank you so much for spending the time with me today. Good luck with everything, and we appreciate
it.
And you have
no problem. Thank you very much for thanks for having me.
FIFA is getting showcased at all of Sony's Vita events, as well as its Vita social clubs, and clearly the early buzz is positive. As I said in the interview, I'm all in on a day one purchase. Personally, I can't wait to get my hands on a Vita and see what it's got, and FIFA's at the top of my list of games I want to play. While I am bummed there's no sharing between the PS3 and the Vita, at least for FIFA, I am hoping the new touchscreen controls make up for that, and one thing's for sure, you'll know as soon as I do. Thanks for listening to this episode of Box Score, brought to you by Games Radar. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. You can follow me on Twitter, my handle is Rich Grisham, and tweet me any comments, questions, and thoughts you may have about this and future shows. Also, follow Games Radar at their handle, Games Radar, and be sure to check my weekly Box Score column each and every Thursday on the site. Every click counts. Until next time, this is Richard Grisham for Box Score.